Hello, everybody. I'm Catherine Bell of Experiential Dream Work, and welcome. So, would you like to? Oh, thank you. Can I go home now? So, wouldn't you like to solve your problems easier, worries, and improve your relationships? Don't worry, you're doing it every night. So we've had a lot of times today when people say, oh, take a breath now, let's like everybody ground. Okay, I think we're all pretty grounded. So I'm going to invite you to do something else. So I would like you to not take a breath. Seriously, don't take a breath. And pretty soon you feel pressure, like your body doesn't like to not breathe. Your body's ready to breathe. So go ahead and feel what it feels like just to be who you are, as you are in your body, breathing naturally. Just feel what that's like. Feel the physical sensations in your body, your chair supporting you, your legs, your clothing, something physical. Feel your emotional state too. And feel what that's like. And then also notice your mental state. Feel into what that is like. And by turning your awareness to these different processes in your body, you can enhance your own well-being just by awareness. Because your body wants to be well. You have all these systems within you and within me. We all have these systems. Heartbeat, breath, digestion, sleep-wake cycle. And all of these systems are designed to keep us healthy and well and thriving. And I would like to say that dreaming is part of that system, that dreaming is part of what regulates us emotionally. And there's increasing scientific evidence showing that what dreams regulate are our emotions. So welcome to Experiential Dream Work. I am again Catherine Bell. I live in Santa Cruz, and you can find out about my work at experientialdreamwork.com. I'd like to tell just a short story about my personal, I guess I could call it awakening, coming into awareness. That the family that I grew up in was a scientific family. We were all very rational and focused on what we could see and touch. Feelings were not welcome. Mom would run away to cry, run upstairs and cry. So I knew that emotions were not welcome, except for the happy ones you plaster on your face. So I learned to stuff it all inside, as so many of us do. And I found that the emotions were below the surface, and soon I lost touch with what they actually were. I was not able to really access them. I didn't really know it at the time, but I was very unhappy, sort of drowning. And I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't know how to make decisions. I could carry on. I was a very good student. I went to grad school. I mean, I did a PhD. I have all the things in astrophysics. So I was able to be very functional in the world, but I was very heady and wasn't able to really choose from my heart. I would just make long lists of pros and cons and go, pick one. I don't know. So this is like my body was something like this thing I would drag around with me, this kind of thing that I would like carry around with me. And it came to a head in 2005 when I was on a windsurfing vacation up in Columbia River Gorge with my one-year-old baby, and my husband had stayed at home, and I came with a friend. Come on in. I came with a friend because my husband didn't come with me, and part of me knew that he was with another woman during that vacation. And while I was up there, I started to feel this pain in my gut. I was so good at ignoring my emotions that I also was able to ignore this physical sensation, even as it got stronger and stronger. And on the third night of this intense and growing pain, as I was lying on the floor of the bathroom, I felt something pop and trickle down inside my gut. And when that happened, I thought, oh, thank God, now I'm going to feel better. I thought that something blockage had given way and I was going to feel better. But my friend came in, my body saved my life. Because my friend came in to the bathroom where I was laying, and he said, your crying just got a lot louder, we're going to the hospital right now. So my mind said, oh, I'm fine, I'm going to be better now. And my body was like, help, help, help me now, help me. So thank God for my body. So 9 days in the hospital there alone, because my friend took my baby and went back to Santa Cruz, and I was there for 9 days by myself. I came to face to face with the way that I had abandoned myself. I had totally abandoned who I was as a human being, and it was very painful, and it was an awakening. And it took years before I started to really untangle this, but that was the seed. I went back to Santa Cruz, and within a few years, I had dumped the husband, kept the baby, drove. The baby's now this tall and starting to drive. And I started an intensive course of dream work. I've always been fascinated by my dreams. At first, my dreams were gray and cloudy and castles and moats and all this. And then the walls started to crack. I started to see things through these walls, and I started to fall. And there was a way that this dreams kind of led me onward. I was in this intensive one-on-one dream work, and I started to feel into my body, and as I felt into my body, I realized how much pain there is in my body. So no wonder I didn't want to feel that. I didn't want to feel that, because human bodies are intense. There's great joy and great pain, and I didn't want to feel any of that. But as the dreams woke me up, I started to come alive, I started to feel passion again, I started to feel fire, and this is the bar still there where the fire is consuming me. And that there, so these images are all from the dreams that I've drawn over the years from my inner work. And I found that the dreams took me back through some painful experiences. This I didn't think at the time, but in retrospect, there's some reliving here of a situation when I was 10 years old. I pulled over a pot of boiling water on my back and burned myself. And I had this dream later of this man with his back on fire. And there's a way that unraveled that experience. And then, of course, about the ruptured appendix, which is what has happened to me up in Oregon, I had dreams about that. But as I went through my dreams, as they unraveled, even these horrible nightmares, being trapped under the floorboards and things, these characters of love and support, like this doctor in the dream here, started to appear and started to be with me so that I could have my feelings, I could have my pain, and still be loved. And these are urns that I found in an abandoned mine that were completely whole and untouched. And it was just miraculous to me that there was a part of me that was completely whole. And so I was able to start to feel support in the fire of my feelings. And even in some ways I was able to unravel some of my painful parts of my childhood where I was not allowed to be afraid or sad or angry. So I have found that these dreams have unraveled in me an immense feeling of surrender and accompaniment, that I'm not alone, and that I am loved, and that I can be who I am without having to work at it so hard, with really surrender and joy. And I started to find my community through this dream work as well, be one among many. And I found that my life has really opened up a lot since I have done this work. And so my current life, I have this explosion of wonderful things happening in my life, a festival that I organize, I do a radio show and a podcast, and I have found an amazing man to love.
Yay!
Thank you. This is the first conference I've been to where I have not been like looking for romantic partners. I feel like I have one. So for being the scientist that I am, though, I wanted to know why. So why do the dreams help so much? And I have clients and dream groups, and they all seem to be helped by this dreaming. But I wanted to know why. So this book called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker up in Berkeley, it's mostly about sleeping, but there's like 3 or 4 chapters about dreaming. I'm sorry, people over here can't see the screen very well. And it just resonated with what it is. He calls it overnight therapy. Dreaming is overnight therapy, and that we don't even have to remember our dreams, that they are actually working within us naturally. It's just how what they evolved to do is to help us feel better. And specifically, it is the emotions that the dreams are working on. And I went back behind the book and looked into a series of research papers by Matthew Walker and started to try to understand a little bit about the research. And so this, I love this quote, dreams optimally prepare the organism for next day social and emotional functioning. And I have to say that there are other studies that show much longer term effects over like 6 months or a year, but science is geared towards small observable events. But even in a 1 day period, you can start to see this effect. And in fact, there was a fascinating study they did about napping. And we all know nap makes you feel better. Like, oh, thank God, nap. But it turns out that if you have a dream during your nap, I'm going to bring this with me here. This is the general nap group over here. But if you have a dream, let me tell you what you're looking at. This is the reactivity, and so fear. You have a certain fear reactivity, sadness, anger, and happiness. It's interesting to me that anger appears with happiness. Think about that. And that all is much improved when you have a nap. So fear goes down, sadness goes down, happiness goes up. So does anger. But people who had had a dream during their nap showed tremendous improvement. People who had no dream during their nap, hardly any improvement at all. So it's basically the dream that's making you feel better, not just the sleep. So that's one of the big clues to what's going on here. So think of an important childhood memory. This is something that maybe shaped who you are, something that you would regard as important. And I'd like maybe kind of have a few people share just one or two. A childhood memory, yes?
I set a forest on fire.
I set a forest on fire, okay, thank you. Another one? No memories, no childhood memories, yep.
Getting bitten on the face by my dog.
Getting bitten on the face by the dog. Okay, so these are both, thank you for sharing. These are both very emotional memories. At the time that these things happened, there a lot of feelings came up. And yet there, I think you would both agree, and everybody who thought of the memory that I think you would agree that the feeling that you have right now about the memory is not as intense as the feeling you had at the time that the memory occurred. So the one thing that Matthew Walker talks about is that the feeling actually tags the memory as important, so we need these memories, because these are things to know. We need to know about the dogs. We need to know about set the forest on fire. But the feeling is, it tags the memory as important. However, the feeling interferes with our ability to make this memory useful. Like if we ever cut our hand with a knife, then every time we picked up a knife, if we had that intense feeling, we'd never be able to, carve up a chicken again, because we'd see the knife and go, oh my goodness, we remember that fear. So what Matthew Walker's research has shown is that this is the emotion with the core of the memory. The emotion is large, it tags the memory as important. But then the dreaming, through the neurology and the neurochemical activity in the brain during the dreaming, it tends to decrease the emotion around this memory. So over time, the memory remains. In fact, the memory is locked into place as important. But the emotion is diminished, so that we can wear away the intense emotion but leave us the lesson. And one thing that actually helps this is that there are several test cases where the system goes awry, like in PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, that when that occurs, people cannot get over. The emotion is still way too intense around the memory. And so they have flashbacks, and when the memory comes up that with a full-blown emotion involved. So people can't function because the memory is so intensely dominated by the emotion. And what Matthew found is that this adrenal system here, which the adrenals are suppressed during dreaming, typically, but for people with severe PTSD, their adrenaline is still very high during the dreaming state. So they never get to the place where the dream can actually wear away the emotion. So there's been some, and the other case has to do with clinical depression, that's another state where this kind of breaks down. So it basically shows where the system works. By the ways that it fails. But the main thing to notice is that the dreams wear away the memory. Like the picture of me with my back on fire was a way of re-entering that memory. It wasn't exactly the memory, because it was boiling water, not fire on my back. But it re-emerged, I re-entered the experience in a way that I could handle and with support, so that the memory of the memory was intact, but the emotion was reduced. So how do we work with our dreams given this? So I just told you, okay, fine, thank you, that you don't have to remember your dreams, which is true. Your dreams are working perfectly well behind the scenes, kind of under the hood, every night as it is. However, there are things like our breathing, which is an autonomic system as well, and works perfectly well without our attention. However, there are many spiritual practices that tell us that we can enhance the benefits of breathing by paying attention to and even intensifying the breathing. So So similar with dreaming, though, by bringing the images to our waking life, we can enhance that healing effect. So we want to recreate in the brain what happens while we're dreaming so that the effect of the dream will be enhanced. You may not know what the dream is referring to. In fact, you don't need to know, but the dream itself has an image and a feeling. The basic elements of a dream are an image and a feeling, and they're usually wrapped up together. So what you want to do is take this visual area, which is increased when you're dreaming, imagine the image from the dream. And then these other red areas are what's enhanced, hippocampus, amygdala. These are all the emotional and personal memory parts of your brain working. So take the image of the dream. I can take an image right now. Some dream that I had recently. Take an image of the dream and let the feeling of it be with you. And as much as possible, don't judge. Frontal cortex. Try to let that go, so that you're not judging, thinking, deciding, planning, because all those things we do when we're awake, we don't do that when we're dreaming. That's reduced dramatically while we're dreaming. So by holding the image and the feeling in our mind, we can enhance that process of dreaming. So here's some tips for enhancing your overnight therapy. Write your dreams down. They will disappear very quickly, and you won't remember all of them, guaranteed. We all have 4 or 5 dreams a night, but if you remember a couple a week, that's plenty to work with. But if you have a dream, write it down, because it will disappear. And that's because the dreaming actually occurs in a part of our brain that we don't pay as much attention to when we're awake. The prefrontal cortex wakes up when we awake, and it just swamps everything else. So stay in your dreaming state and write the dream down. Record the feelings, especially the feelings during the dream. And it can be very interesting if the feelings are surprising, like the dream where I'm sewing something onto my hand. I was sewing chicken into my hand, and it was just like, and I was like putting the needle through my flesh, and the dream was like, no big deal. That's useful to know, because that no big deal is actually a big deal. So record the feeling during the dream upon awakening, and then look at the memories and associations that you have. Don't worry about the symbols, is what I would advise. Symbols kind of bring you up into your brain and your thinking things. And I want to encourage you to go where the dreams go, which is into the feelings and the images. Breathe into the dream images, write about it, draw it, share with somebody, maybe ask for just listening, because people will go, oh, I know exactly what your dream means. And no, they don't want that. Join a Star Dream Group, get a dream coach. So there's all these different ways you can work with your dreams, and anything is good. Even just waking up and sharing it over the breakfast table is awesome. So I love this Russian proverb, the morning is wiser than the evening. So get yourself a good night's sleep, because dreaming is most intense right before dawn. And if you short yourself by an hour of sleep, you're shorting yourself by an hour of dreaming. So I don't always follow this advice myself, I'm sorry. But the longer sleep you get, the more your dreaming self can work to improve. Not just your emotions, it turns out also things like recognizing people's facial expressions is incredibly enhanced by dreaming. And so if you have a short night's sleep, everybody looks cranky. You know, and it's true. This is a true thing. So people like medical responders and parents who are totally critically reliant on decoding someone else's facial expression, if they get a short night's sleep, and they're the ones who do get short night's sleep, then they're not judging correctly what's going on, what they're looking at. So the morning is wiser than the evening, and write it down. So this is me, take a picture of this, or you can look at my webpage, I've passed out some business cards. Experientialdreamwork.com. My latest passion is this weekly radio show podcast, this community radio show, Spanakers, and I'm having such a blast doing this radio show. The call-in show, and I also do interviews. So there's that. We have Festival of Dreams. I'm Catherine Bell. To your health. Thank you.